Welcome to Elevate Your Event, your favorite podcast for transforming fundraising events. Join us weekly for expert tips and creative ideas to make your next event a standout success.
In this episode of Elevate Your Event, Jeff and I talk with Mitch Stein from Chariot about the mysterious world of donor-advised funds. Over $200 billion of funds are sitting in charitable accounts just waiting to be donated. Join us as we uncover the secrets, the ins and outs, and show you exactly how to seamlessly integrate DAFs into your upcoming events and donation campaigns. Don't miss out.
Welcome back to the Elevate Your Event podcast, where we talk about all the various ways you can make your next fundraising event better and maybe even increase the revenue at your fundraising event.
Ooh.
And we've got a special guest. We've got Mitch from Chariot, or you say Give Chariot or Chariot, or what do you tend to say, Mitch?
Chariot.
Yeah, Chariot. The name of the company. Awesome. Okay. So tell us a little bit about what Chariot does. Just in terms of, you know, payments and donor advised funds and whatnot, and kind of how you guys got started and all that other kind of great stuff that our listeners would love to hear about.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, everybody. My name is Mitch Stein. I'm the head of strategy here at Chariot. We are a donor advised fundraising solution for nonprofit organizations. So we help embed donor advised fund giving directly into your donation forms and anywhere that a donor is inspired to give online. So historically, when someone wanted to give from their donor advised fund, they had to go log into their portal, look up the organization, take all these extra steps, sometimes even call somebody to actually get a grant submitted. And we take all those steps out and put it entirely in your existing fundraising flows. So can go into more details and all that stuff later. But to your specific question to start off with, of like, where did this come from? So our founders here at Chariot all made a commitment to give 10% of their income to charity. And they actually set up their first company or product, which was like a savings account for charitable giving called My 10%. And they would automatically put part of their paycheck in there and hold themselves accountable to their giving goals and manage it in that account. And someone was like, have you heard of a donor advised fund? Because you're basically doing that without the tax benefits. So they were like, oh, cool. We'll set up donor advised funds instead. So then they opened donor advised funds accounts, but then they had friends that were running the marathon or doing a bike ride or a 5K and raising money, and they couldn't use their DAF where they'd set all this money aside for charity in all those instances where they wanted to give. And so that was where the light bulb moment happened, which was like, it should be the easiest thing to do should be to use your DAF for a charitable gift, because that's exactly what it's for.
Yeah.
So we can talk more about exactly what a DAF is, but that's the, I feel like it's a nice story about where this all came from.
That's a great story. And I love the fact that they had the idea, right? And the idea came from the heart, right? And then they kind of put the headpiece to it later to say, let's now make this kind of, you know, a little bit more tax advantageous. So maybe we should start with what is a DAF, a donor advised fund? Because
I like that we can call it a DAF.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I think a lot of our readers probably, or do I call them readers?
I don't know why you call them readers, but
a lot of our listeners.
Or watchers.
Yeah.
Or
a lot
audience.
Of our viewers, our listeners, a lot of our audience probably knows, but there's probably some that don't. And so why don't you give us kind of the elementary, you know, kind of 1, 2, 3 on what a donor advised fund is?
Yeah. Happy to. And I think, like you said, it's nice that we have an acronym because it's shorter. A DAF stands for a donor advised fund, which is a tax advantage savings account for charitable giving. So if you're familiar with a 401k for retirement or an HSA for healthcare spending, it's a very similar structure. You can put money into a donor advised fund and you get your tax write-off on that full contribution immediately. Then over time, you can make grants out to nonprofits. And while the money's in the account, you can invest it in the market. So also can continue growing over time and you can contribute those gains to nonprofits over the years. People can also contribute appreciated assets. So if you've got shares of Apple that have gone way through the roof and you want to contribute that to your DAF, you get the full tax write-off on that contribution. You can also avoid the capital gains tax you would have owed if you had just sold it in the open market. And then it can continue to grow tax-free within the account. So it's often referred to as a triple tax advantage vehicle for those reasons. So the important takeaway is there's huge tax advantages to having a DAF. That's really where it started. I would say it started getting more widely used 15, 20 years ago, particularly amongst like the ultra, ultra wealthy. But what's happened in the last 5 years is there's just been this explosion in usage. There's now over 3 million people that are using DAFs. And so, yes, that's many people who are optimizing their taxes and contributing securities and that kind of thing. But it's also a lot of people that are just more like kind of like our founders. They just wanted an accountable method to engage intentionally with their philanthropy. It's a benefit that's offered by employers, similar to a 401k, like the example we talked about earlier, where it's actually, that's how I have a DAF actually. Is my employer is Chariot. They set up a DAF account for me. I can select an amount I want to contribute on a recurring basis. So I put in $100 a month and the company matches $100 a month into that account. So it's actually like a really cool alternative to corporate matching. So that's just one example of how it's expanding in usage beyond just the ultra, ultra high net worth audience that it was historically.
That's awesome. And is this typically managed by like a Fidelity or kind of your kind of common organizations like that? Or are they unique?
Yeah, I would say the one that probably your audience is most familiar with are going to be Fidelity, Vanguard, Schwab, like these huge financial brokerage firms. They manage donor advised funds for individual account holders. But there's 1,100 donor advised fund sponsors in the country. So it's also a lot of community foundations, places that are called single issue charities. So that's like the National Christian Foundation, or different Jewish federations. So they have like a specific cause area or umbrella that they're focused on. So there's a few different providers that someone could hold their DAF with, just depending on their priorities and who they want to interact with. But most commonly, people are going to be seeing those Fidelity checks come in, Vanguard, Schwab. That's where they're going to be getting the most volume because they make up those three 40% of the market, if not more. I forget the exact stat, right, but a lot.
Okay. So let's talk about the the legal restrictions on what you can pay for out of a DAF versus maybe, to your point, what the account itself might have restrictions on, like a National Christian Foundation versus a Fidelity.
Yeah. So let's take those one at a time because those are both really important. The first being a donor advised fund is because I'm getting that tax write-off upfront when I contributed something, an asset or cash into the account, I don't get another tax write-off when I make the gift. So that's just a really important thing for nonprofits. Oftentimes, they'll just automatically send a tax receipt for any gift. But when you get a distribution from a DAF, you cannot send a tax receipt because you could be liable for a non-tax, like that's not a tax deductible event. They already got their tax write-off. So that's number one, and I think a really common area where people can get tripped up. The other is around the usage of DAF funds, which it's really similar to anything else you would take in a tax-deductible donation for, meaning you cannot use DAFs for anything where you get benefit in return as the donor. I can't buy a table. I can't pay for an auction item. And that's the real specific restriction with donor advised funds, where they are, it's a regulated vehicle. And so they're paying attention to the usage of a gift for something where the donor is receiving something in return that's deemed a benefit to the donor.
Yeah. So your villa in Tuscany idea, Lori, that's not going to happen.
My donor advised funds.
Yes.
Yes. But it's an important one because a lot of nonprofits, are pressured by donors to try, look the other way or look around those rules. And I think a lot of fundraisers are tempted to say, that's the donor's risk. It's not my fault if they misuse their DAF. And that is not true. Right. You're putting your 501c3 status in jeopardy if you are taking impermissible gifts for impermissible reasons. So that's a important one where you got to hold your ground. And I think the best thing you can do, by the way, when we talk to people about this, is to have a policy. If you can point the donor to the policy, you're going to say, sorry, this is the way we do things. It makes it impersonal. It's not you personally telling them they can't do something. You're just referring them to what is a standard public gift receipt policy that you have as an organization.
Yeah, I love that. I always send people to our handbid policy. That always goes over really well.
Yeah, but if you partner with software or something, I mean, you can add some of those triggers in there. Where
that's where I was going to go. I agree with you.
I was going there first.
Well, I think we could not only the policy part, we could restrict, like in our software, for example, Mitch, we could say, hey, wait a second, you're paying for this mixture of items with this. We could just disallow that from happening. Mm-hmm.
Or mm-hmm. if they have just a donation that doesn't have anything included in it, they can pay for a portion of that invoice, maybe with a DAF, and then the other portion they'd have to pay with credit card or check or foundation or something along those lines. So
we could help.
That'd be really cool.
We could help save a charity from themselves, I guess, mm-hmm. is what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. When it can be incorporated in technology, that's really important. But I think there are lots of DAF gifts made at events or kind of like pledged to be made at an event. Mm. And so it's certainly still a big part of event fundraising. It's just nuanced because you can't use it to buy your ticket or other items.
Mm-hmm. They can't get anything in return for it.
Yeah. And so like, if you think about how HamBid works, right, someone is going to have an entire invoice and it's going to have their ticket and their two or three raffle or drawing items they bought, their wine pole or whatever. And then it's going to have all of the auction items they won. And then maybe what they donated in the paddle raise. Maybe they donated, say, $1,000 in the paddle raise. Like, we would have to, in our software, restrict if you wanted to pay with a DAF, we would only allow you to select the donation items. Mm-hmm. Is the items you could pay for because the rest of it, they're going to have to pay some other way.
But.
Yeah. I think that's a really good solution. And just everyone being aware of it, because I think that's also, and folks listening to this, you're taking the right first step is educating yourselves. And like you said at the beginning, some folks might not know what DAFs are. This is an area where most fundraisers are not comfortable. They aren't super familiar with how it works or the restrictions. So it's a really important topic to be raising with your teams, making sure everyone's aware of it, because it's the fastest growing vehicle in philanthropy. There's $230 billion sitting in DAFs waiting to be donated. And more money is going into DAFs than private foundations now. Mm. And in 2022, the latest year we have full year statistics on, there was over $50 billion granted out of DAFs to nonprofits. So it's not some bespoke instrument that comes up every once in a while. This is where philanthropy is moving, and it's already a huge, almost $1 in $5 in philanthropy are moving through a DAF.
I love it.
And don't you have to have a minimum amount of money in a DAF? Like, you have to maintain a minimum? Was that?
It depends on the provider. The type? So those big national financial brokerage houses, I think they're all minimum, like zero minimum balances. Okay. So that, and that's part of what's accelerated that broader usage of a DAF. But a lot of the community foundations or maybe smaller financial institutions will have higher minimums, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000 minimum balance, and varying minimum gift sizes. So each individual gift has to be at least $500 or something like that. But there's been a lot of downward pressure on those restrictions because the DAF market has been booming and it's competitive to get people to hold your DAF with you. And if I'm more restricted to use this than something else, then it's often going to move people over to a different provider and a different platform.
Mm-hmm. And these are, I would imagine, like in terms of investment portfolios, it's your kind of typical management fee that a Fidelity or somebody would charge you.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up because there's some changes under consideration right now at the Treasury. There's actually a public hearing happening on May 6th that I'm going to try to attend and report back on. So getting really nerdy in the actual like policy legislation stuff. But yes, it is similar to a standard brokerage account today, where someone's earning management fees and then whatever investment vehicles you're selecting within your account, there's standard fees, investment fees for whoever's actually managing those investment vehicles, those mutual funds or however you're investing. But I would just say pay attention because those rules and restrictions are certainly evolving. There's every few years, it seems to be some attempt at legislation that would implement some new restrictions on DAFs, what their payout requirements are, for example, but that hasn't moved anywhere to date. That could always change. But today, there's no payout requirement, meaning there's no time limit. Unlike a foundation where I'm required to pay out 5% of my balance every year, with DAFs, it's there isn't a specific restriction like that. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, the actual payout requirement or payout rate that we've seen historically has been over 20% per year since they started tracking it in 2009. Okay. So it generally is used with a high turnover rate, but there is no legal restriction on it. And it's a reason why there's some differing opinions on DAFs because of that.
Is there a maximum that you can contribute to a DAF? I mean, you would think if people can just keep it in there and they're not required to spend any of it, it's just, you know.
Well, the main restriction to keep in mind is that it can only leave a DAF account for a charitable donation. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I can take it out back out at a future point in time. So it's like right. Once you put it in, that's the only way you can use it. Okay. So yes, you could sit on that balance for a while in theory, but it is to eventually be donated. Mm-hmm. But it's a good question. The maximum, I mean, there might be some, it might vary state by state with particular tax codes, but that'd be up in the like tens of millions range.
Not my income.
Not as common of a problem.
It's not similar to like an HSA where the employee and the employer have a max contribution amount they can do tax-free. This must have much higher thresholds.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If it's offered as an employee benefit, then they can set up their own restrictions. So like I said, the example earlier, my employer has $100 per month that they'll match of a contribution into a DAF. That varies widely depending on the provider. But depending on the employer, but it's not like a, no, you're correct. It's not that same kind of legal restriction. And one other question you had asked earlier that I realized didn't get back to, restrictions on the DAFs that are more specific. So National Christian Foundation, this is less relevant for a nonprofit because there's nothing to do about this. It's just good to be aware of. But if a nonprofit has a specific cause area or like angle, I would say, so like National Christian Foundation might select certain types of organizations that they don't view as like aligned to their values. And so they may have other restrictions on where those donations can go. But if I'm putting my DAF account there, I'm viewing that as like they're helping me to make sure I'm donating where my values are aligned.
Right.
But in general, the vast majority of DAFs, they're doing their diligence to make sure that the nonprofit is a 501c3 that's in good standing with the IRS.
So I can't just like give money to Jeff as a donation. The Jeff Foundation. Yeah. They have to actually prove.
Hey, I know how to fill out a 1023. I can certainly create a foundation if you need one.
But a worthy recipient of it.
So. $100 a month, Lori, coming. I bet you HamBid would match. If you were going to give me $100 a month, I bet HamBid would match that.
Okay.
Yeah, just kidding. but you know, what you just described, Mitch, actually happened to one of our clients. And so it's interesting you brought it up. And it actually was the National Christian Foundation. Mm. And their donor, the NCF, said no. They would not issue the donation to this charity. And then obviously, just because we're part of this whole process – you know, we were notified and had to get involved at some level. But that's when I first learned about that, you know, that, and look, I get it. I understand the value in working with, you know, an organization like that. If they kind of share your values, they're quote unquote looking out for you. But in this particular case, I think it was just kind of a misinterpretation of what the charity did, but it was interesting to see, you know, and they could not do it. I mean, they had to write a check.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's important for donor. I mean, I guess the important thing for assuming your audience is mostly fundraisers. It's a great thing if a donor wants to talk to you about their DAF or like, hey, I'm hearing more about DAFs. How do they work? Or like being able to have that conversation is good. One thing that's important to keep in mind is that I would always respond with like, I'm not a financial advisor.
Right.
Just like make sure you're putting that disclaimer out there because you do not want to be providing financial advice. But being able to engage in a conversation around that is like, yeah, we have lots of other donors that use DAFs. Like these are some of the benefits they talk about. You should talk to your financial advisor about it.
Yep.
But they might also ask you like, what are the differences between these different DAFs? And so that they go in aware, like most of them are super flexible. Some come with these restrictions. You know, if you hold it at the Community Foundation, you'll probably get more like hands-on service from them because they want to, that's like their value add. And you're also holding those assets now locally. So providing some added benefits to the local community. Fidelity, it's usually like, well, if you already have your brokerage account at Fidelity, it's like two clicks to move some shares over to a DAP. So it's just like super seamless if that's where you do your brokerage. So that's, it's just a really great conversation to have with a donor for relationship building. And it's great if a donor sets up a DAP because they're basically now setting money into a gift card to give to charity for themselves. So like the next time you come back for a donation, because whenever anyone makes a gift, we're simultaneously making two decisions. One is a budgeting decision. I'm deciding, okay, how much money can I part with right now to give to charity? Two, do I want to give it to this organization? And whenever I'm making two decisions, it slows me down and it reduces my likelihood of conversion and the total amount that I'm going to give. Hmm. When I separate those decisions, I'm way faster to like, oh yeah, here's, you know, it's like fun money. I have this fun money account now that I'm going to give money up to charity. It's not as burdened with that budgeting decision that slows people down.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And that's insightful. I'm going to use that on my wife, actually, the two decisions thing. See if I can get away with some stuff. But, you know, let's kind of go back to what kind of value Chariot adds, because I will tell you, like, I was recently at an FCA board meeting, and this was for a division of FCA that's in kind of the greater Denver area. And we had a board member give a 10-minute presentation on how to donate to that particular organization using a donor advised fund. And I was shocked at it, not only that it took 10 minutes, but the number of FCA entries that were in his Fidelity account that he could pick from. And he's like, I had no idea. I finally had to call national headquarters for FCA and ask which one of these is it? Because I want to say there were 50 or 60 rows in this table. And that gets tough, right? I mean,
it's a super common problem, either for that reason you mentioned, where there's lots of chapters of a similar organization, or, I mean, like, pick any cancer organization. There's going to be like 20 similarly sounding organizations, or like Hope for Haiti. There's like 30 different Haiti's Hope House, right? You know, there's like a lot of different. So this comes up all the time, and it's a super big problem, because also if someone gave to the wrong organization, they're in their DAF portal. I, as the nonprofit, had nothing to do with that. So I don't know if they were wanting to make a gift, if it went to the wrong place. And so it's totally out of your control. And so it's one of the really important things about having a DAF giving tool that's in your fundraising platform or your website, because you have pre-selected the EIN where they're making the gift. So you're taking, you're number one, taking the pain point out of the process for the donor, where they're not having to look it up and try to find it. You now know when they initiated the gift, for how much, you get their contact information. So you're really closing the loop on that whole gift process and putting it in your own environment where you've spent all this time optimizing to get people to donate to your organization.
Right.
So you want them to complete those gifts there and not send them off to a platform you have no control over. And spoiler alert, those platforms are not spending all their time to optimize for the biggest gift for your nonprofit,
right?
That's not their incentive. Their incentives are they make money when funds sit in their accounts,
right?
At the DAP.
Mm-hmm. Well, but what you're also bringing up, I think, is important, because go back to the example I gave, right? There's a lot of national charities that have a ton of chapters. Some of those chapters have their own EIN, some don't. Okay. Some of them shared the national corporation's EIN. Sometimes that's like both within the same organization. And so when you work with a fundraising platform where it's built in, not only are you getting the EIN right, but now the organization knows that those funds were coming their way. Because think about just saying, hey, you know what? Maybe the Arapaho chapter of the FCA is using corporate's EIN, okay? Well, now this check shows up in Kansas City. They have no idea, right? And they're like, awesome, somebody donated to FCA. You know, I mean, unless they were known they needed to funnel it somewhere, they wouldn't, So, mm-hmm. you know, so I think that point that you brought up, I think is really important for the listeners to understand, which is when you go through a fundraising platform, like those people are now paying an invoice or making a donation on that platform and paying with their DAFs. You see that, like that entire loop is closed.
And yeah. That's the advantage. Totally. And that example you just raised about the check showing up, the other important thing to remember is the check is showing up without helpful identifying information on right. the donor. So it's like, cool, we got $10,000, but it's like from the Smith Fund at Fidelity. And you're like, where do I even begin mm-hmm. to go try
and
to,
thank and them.
to thank them, just try to tie this to a specific person. So capturing name and email as like a given in the field that's a part of your tool on your own website or fundraising platform is tremendously helpful. I just got off the phone with another nonprofit that recently started using Chariot, and they got a $7,000 gift from a donor that had historically been making $100 gifts because they had this DAF payment option available and they'd previously been giving with their credit card. And so now they knew the person has a DAF. They got a much larger gift. They knew who they were immediately. So they completely changed their strategy with this person. They moved from their general annual giving list to their major donor prospects and started stewarding them in a more hands-on way. So like having that contact information and being able to say thank you immediately for folks making 4, 5, 6-figure gifts is super important.
Yeah. I think let's dive into that a little bit, because you mentioned something that we've talked about in other podcast episodes a lot, which is capturing that name and that email and maybe a phone number, but more specifically, definitely the name and the email. And we've had over the years lots of conversations with clients as well as prospects around this. I don't want to call it like a common belief, but definitely a prevailing belief that my super wealthy, you know, I would call them high-end donors, are not going to be willing to give me that information. I don't want to bother them for that information, yet those might be the people donating through a DAF. And so that makes it tough. That's why, you know, when we have these conversations about registration and check-in and everything else, we have to go back and remind our clients, do not create fake accounts for your users to get them into a software system. Do not, you know, bypass getting accurate information at the door simply because you feel like you're inconveniencing them, because then when this check shows up, you actually know how to contact this person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's super important. And I think most folks don't actually know what the process looks like for the DAF donor in their own portal. So less than 4% of DAF gifts are given anonymously. So the vast majority are not given anonymously. And yet, if you ask a nonprofit, like their biggest pain point with DAF giving is they'll tell you anonymity. What they actually mean is like, I'm not getting helpful, actionable information about the gift and the donor, because the vast majority of the time they get a fund name. So when I open a DAF account, I can name it whatever I want. It could be the Mitch Stein Fund, but it could also be like the Puppies and Kitty Cats Fund. Like it has, I could name it whatever I want. And the vast majority of the time, it's not actually helpful. And they're not. So I, as the donor, even if I don't intend to give anonymously, there's no like toggle for me to say, share my name and email. That doesn't exist in right. the DAF portal. I'll just say, no, I don't want to give anonymously. But I don't realize as the donor how little information they're getting. And so donors who do know this, who are like close to the organization and they've told them about this problem, they'll put in the notes field, like, this is from Mitch Stein. I'm giving this at your, like, they're helpful. But you just have to think about it from a user experience perspective. The vast majority of people are not going to take those extra steps.
Right.
And so what we've done in Chariot is just make it seem like a normal e-commerce checkout where, yeah, if you want to go in and purposefully delete your name and email to make it anonymous, you have the right to do that. But the vast, vast majority of people don't actually want that. It's just not easy. And by making it easy is the way that you get people to provide that information that's more helpful.
Well, it's unfortunate because the people that are probably doing the workaround for the DAF donations is probably because they have the story of, I have given to something and nobody ever responded back to me. I have that experience. My husband and I donated through some funds, my husband's a financial planner, and so he donates strangely. He loves DAFs. But we donated and they never said anything to us. And it was a significant donation, at least for us, to give. Yeah. And they never said anything. And finally, I mean, I just kind of mentioned it and they were like, oh, you were the one that did that. And I was like, yeah.
I would have said, thank you, Lori.
I know.
You donated to me.
Well, then they were super thankful. But I mean, and I'm not looking for like a bunch of accolades or nothing, but I mean, just an even acknowledgement that the transaction went through, you received it, and you're actually utilizing those funds for what I donated for.
Well, and we've gotten them at our charity too. Mm-hmm. And there's always a board conversation on where do we think this came from? You know, it doesn't happen a lot, but every once in a while I was like, we got a $10,000 donation. Does anybody know who this person is? And then there's a board conversation and someone goes, I know who it is, mm-hmm. right? And then we're like, okay, it's not super clear sometimes. You're right, Mitch. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you got to connect some dots and say, oh, they named it after their kid, you know, or something like that. And so you...
Well, we've said this many, many times at all these different events. It's make it easy for your donors to donate. Make it simple. They're coming because they love you. They want to give money to you when they come to an event. Some people, we always say, are there for maybe the drinks and the and the plated dinner.
Yeah.
But I mean, most of the time they're there because they've already bought into your story. So make it easy for them to donate, but then also make it easy for yourself to follow up with those people. So important.
I think so.
I mean, it's like another way is to frame that is make it easy for them to donate and to do it again, because the better you're stewarding them, they're going to be more likely to follow through. In your example, Lori, like you're like, you don't feel really that inclined to give again the next year because you're like, did you even get my gift? You don't know. And the other thing that we hear a lot about is just the back and forth to confirm gifts. Mm-hmm. So like I've heard from a donor, like, yes, I'm going to give for my DAF. Great. I'm sitting around for the next weeks, months. Did you make it? Is it lost? You know,
and it's awkward.
How much did you,
he wants,
I don't want to go back and ask. And we've heard stories where people are like, we ultimately took 6 months to sort something out and we had to get on the phone with the donor, his assistant, his banker at Wells Fargo, and our team to finally figure out what happened to the staff check. It actually had gotten mailed and lost in the mail, but it's like, it just makes the organization, like in that whole example, it always, unfortunately, reflects negatively on the nonprofit, even though they're not at fault.
Nothing
at
to do
all,
with it. Yeah,
have nothing to do with it. The donor's like, well, they didn't even, they never even thanked me, or they never even got my gift. It's because the payments back in the back end, which is what we focus on all day long, is really messy and complicated. But there's a really elegant way to solve that, which is by making the initiation of the gift happen within your own systems.
Yep. It shouldn't take that long to figure out who donated to your organization and be able to turn around a touch point to them and say thank you. I mean, your turnaround for a donation and a thank you should be.
It should be. Yeah.
Very quick.
You know, the funny thing for us is I think sometimes it is when you, especially when you're expecting it and you know, like, hey, they said they're going to give this money. The ones that have really kind of puzzled us, I mean, I'd say, thankfully, are the ones where like we were not expecting it. It just showed up where it's like, wow, this was awesome. We were not expecting these people to donate, but I'm so glad we figured out who they were.
I love the story around the person that was a $100 donor and then suddenly just dropped $7,000 because they have a DAF and they made it easy for them to do it.
Well, and let's be honest, right? It's rich people are not generous. Generous people are generous, right?
I love that.
And that's good.
You know, we it's something that we have built in. Obviously this isn't an audio podcast, right? Show you this in the modal, but the donor gets to their pain donating through DAFPay, which is the Chariot tool, when they get to the final pain where they're confirming their gift, we remind them of their total balance. And that's a really important anchor because often someone will be like, oh, well, first of all, DAF donors rarely know the actual current balance in their DAF because it's in the market. So it's moving and you're not checking it every day. So a few months could have gone by and you're like, oh, wow, market was up 10%. Like I have a lot more to give away. So we find that 30% of donors, once they're reminded of their DAF balance, end up increasing their gift size from what they originally intended. So it's really powerful to remind people. And there's a study done, and I don't remember all the exact statistics, but someone was standing in a grocery store to perform this research, and they had two sample audiences, one in which they asked them when they walked in how much money was in their checking account, and one in which they didn't. And they asked them how much they were planning on spending at the grocery store. And the people who they asked spent like 50% more when they were reminded of their how much money they actually had in their account. So even some simple things like at the grocery store.
We should do this inside the Hambit software. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the blah, blah, blah fundraiser. By the way, we've scanned your checking account.
People would love that. That's so funny, Mitch, you say that. My husband and I are always joking. I never know how much money I have in my checking account.
I don't either.
Ever. But I'd love that feature.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, I know it might sound like a creepy thing. Like in order to approve a grant, we have to know the total balance because otherwise they could select an amount that wouldn't clear.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we have to check that. And then we can render suggested amounts based on their total balance in their account. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the average DAF balance is $120,000.
Wow.
So There's a lot
untapped
of money there
potential.
So is your top donation level 119,999 or no? You don't go that high.
Our largest gift we've processed so far is over $100,000.
Yeah.
But we also have seen several examples where people get to that screen and they end up just donating the entire amount because the exact amount, like put in $12,978 or whatever, and they actually drained their DAF just on that one gift when they were reminded how much is in there.
That's awesome.
Well, and when you're at these live events and we're doing these fundraising events, I mean, you're already working with people's emotions, right? You're already, you know, that's the whole point of a paddle raise. I mean, whether people want to admit it or not, you're trying to express the need, what you guys need, and then you're giving that emotional moment where they're giving the money and they're part of your cause and your purpose. Well, imagine how easy it would be to go on there and go, oh, I was going to give $1,000 because, you know, if you're like me, you come to an event, I have a budget of what I'm going to give. I always know what I'm going to give. And whether I get that from silent auction items or ticket purchases or donations, fine. But when I'm at an event and I get emotionally touched and then I look at my balance from Chariot and it says, oh, well, you've got, you know, $50,000 in there. I'm going to be like, oh, I just love this organization. Give them more money. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that feature.
You get it before you sober up. I agree 100%.
Right. I don't ever... I don't know.
I've been to too many events with Lori. Sorry.
lots of benefits to the in-person event.
Lots of giving remorse on Sundays.
Anyway, I love that.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yes. Giving remorse. Oh, that is a good podcast. We're going to do that.
Yeah.
That'd be super fun.
This has been helpful for me. I mean,
me too.
Mm-hmm. I thank you so much for coming on and kind of explaining DAFs to our audience and kind of what the restrictions are and kind of how you set it up and, you know, and it is important for the charities to understand what those restrictions are on their side. And again, you know, as we integrate Chariot into HandBid, and we can put some of those protections in place for them so that nobody gets in trouble. But what a convenience. Mm-hmm. I mean, just we hear about it so much, right? For people coming up at the end of the night and saying, well, can I pay with my DAF? I would love to be able to say, you can pay for this part of your bill with your DAF, and then the rest you're going to pay on a credit card or something like that.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Love it. Such a good use case. And it's only going up from here. I mean, this has been growing over 20% on average per year for the past 5 years. So you don't see that in philanthropy very often. So it's a super exciting part of the market to be working in.
Yep. It is. Well, and thank you for being in that part of the market, because I see what kind of value you're delivering to charities for sure and to their donors, right? As I go back, it was funny, like just to kind of circle back on the FCA thing, I did raise my hand and said, you know what, like this is one thing we could actually put in HandBid where you would literally just say pay with the DAF and you wouldn't have to pick it out of 55 rows in this table. And the guy looked at me like, are you kidding me?
Imagine.
When is that going to be done, Jeff? Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, there's definitely value there for donors. They would love it.
Yep. Awesome.
Awesome.
All right, Mitch, you enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much again for spending some time with us. And I know, like, again, I think our listeners learned a lot as well as we did.
Of course. Always happy to answer questions. People can find me on LinkedIn. If they've got more specific DAF questions for their organization, I'm always happy to chat.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap up this episode of the Elevate Your Event podcast. Thanks, everybody, for attending. And until we meet again, happy fundraising.
A special thank you to Mitch from Chariot. For more information, reach out to them at givechariot.com. If you enjoyed our show, please take a moment to leave us a review. You can find us on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Don't forget to subscribe for more great content. And if you're a fan of video, check us out on YouTube. Until next time, happy fundraising.